Greetings from K9 to Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum. End of message.
Happy day, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 167 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there, Doe. Chan, I'm Doc Doe.
I am Hayden, and you will obey me.
Chan, I'm Mark.
Hayden? We're going to lose our clean tag on iTunes now, because you didn't say it politely, do you know that, don't you?
Oh, I do apologise. We have a clean tag?
Yeah. What do you think all the beeps have been for over the years?
Impossible. I've been doing this for 7 years.
Hello, listeners. Now, this episode is finally going to be one of our Doctor Era retrospectives, but I don't want the rest of you spoiling it by doing silly little jokes until we get to the announcements, okay? So now, where are we? Oh, it's a podcast! Oh, what's this? It's a microphone! You two. Oh, it's a pair of co-hosts! What's that out there? Oh! It's a rapidly dwindling listenership.
Yeah, Doc, you need to apologise.
Does that mean, if you're evoking the spirit of the 10th Doctor, does that mean that you're going to fall in love with one of us? Probably the one that's nearest to being underage, and the other one you're going to completely malign and borderline mentally abuse?
Yes, we've finally got around to doing our 10th Doctor retrospective podcast. Every time we do a retrospective on a Doctor's era, faithless listeners, we usually re-watch that era through for research. And Hayden, for some reason, has been nagging Mark and me since last July. What are we going to do the next David Tennant 10th Doctor
retrospective? Well, because we need to get them done, though. I'm a completist, like many Doctor Who fans out there, and considering we only have 3 or 4 Doctors left, I was thinking, oh, come on, if we get them done soon, it's going to be glorious.
And Mark and I have been putting it off and putting it off for so long, because
yes,
as much as we love doing the podcast, it's undeniable that since the dawn of the Chris Chibnall era, watching Doctor Who has gradually become something of a chore for us.
No, I'd say watching, having to sit down and think, right, I need to watch this whole season is something I find quite daunting at the moment, especially with regards to New Who. And so I found it easier. I mean, I didn't have to do a lot of revision for the Pertwee era.
No.
Nor, to be honest, the Hartnell or the Tom. But for some reason, I think with the new series, there's a hell of a lot of it that I haven't watched since broadcast.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's what it was like with me.
I mean, I had to revise the Sylvester McCoy as well, and I will have to revise the Colin Baker. But there's some Doctor Who eras that just are quite in the distant past for me, and there's a few stories from them that I may have watched recently, but on the whole, a lot of it's...
Are we going to have to binge-watch the entire Colin Baker era?
Oh, at some point, yeah, by the sounds of it, yeah.
Well, hang on, I think... I'm not doing anything Saturday morning, so... I don't think any of us were ever really David Tennant fanboys, were we? I don't think we ever fell for David's supposed charms. And unlike his squealing teen legions, I don't think any of us especially wanted David to sit on our faces.
Anyway, we eventually
got round to it.
I don't know, because for me, David Tennant era was one that I watched with Polly a lot.
Oh, right.
Especially series 2. But she didn't watch all of Blink on broadcast. I mean, she would have only been, 7 or something. Yeah. And then Waters of Mars absolutely finished her off. She didn't watch Doctor Who for quite a while after that.
What, finished off emotionally, you mean?
Huh?
When you say it finished her off, do you mean emotionally, or she didn't like it?
Oh, the fear. Just, oh, it, really? It was, it terrified her. Well, I mean, she would have been like when was Walter Mars? 2008?
6, 7, 9. It would have been 9.
Yeah.
2009. So she'd have been 8 or 9. And so it.
God, love.
So she. Absolutely terrified her.
I've not met Polly for a few years and she was already a grown woman then. How long ago was it all this?
Yeah, I know. It's shocking, isn't it? You think back.
So, listeners, what we've done, as we do every time we do this, we've put out umpteen memory joggers on social media asking for your votes for your top 5 favourite 10th Doctor stories. And for every story someone votes in first place, we give it 5 points. 4 points for something in second place, 3 points for something in third place, 2 points, 1 point, and so on. And we've actually ended up with more. The only Doctor who's ever been outvoted on this is John Pertwee. We've had a fair few people voting in. So, the best thing about the results of this David Tennant poll is that finally we have once again a juicy number of nul point stories.
Oh, I bet. Oh, can I guess?
So, we're going to play our nul point game, and possibly for the first time since we started doing that, we're able to do so without thinking slightly aggrieved towards our Eurovision neighbours, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
So, 12 points from Ukraine go to United Kingdom.
There's 12, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, Soundrider. Oh, it feels so good, doesn't it?
What, so they don't actually hate us per se?
No, it really is because the songs are flaming terrible after all.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Yeah.
So, I'm going to ask each of you in turn to guess one of the 6 stories which got nul point. We'll say heads, Hayden, tails, Mark. Right, so Hayden, you go first.
I'm going to say...
The Doc's already chosen.
Oh, all right then, fine. I love a democracy, don't you, Mark?
Yeah.
Right, okay, my first...
Don't forget, double headers, 2-part stories count as 1 story.
Right, I'm going to choose the next Doctor, because it's a smelly old pile of poo. What?
No. Nope.
God.
Close, but no cigar.
I'm going to say... I'll go for some low-hanging fruit, fear her.
Yes. Oh, Mark, that is a bit... How do you have any self-respect going for something as easy as that?
Well, it's a competition.
Hayden?
Blimey. Gee, there's so many returns here. I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Planet of the Dead.
Well done. That's one of 6.
Oh, get in.
Mark?
Okay. I'm going to go with the Sontaran 2-parter.
No.
Oh! Do you know what? I bet that's just gone over the bar, hasn't it?
It has actually, yes.
Oh my God. What could it be? Thing is, though, because there's so many episodes, I just want... Idiot's Lantern?
No.
Oh!
Yes, yeah. Do you know what? I'm going to adjust my aim slightly.
Say that, Mark.
So adjust my shorts as I do my running up. I'm going to adjust my aim slightly, just to the side of the Sontaran 2-parter. I'm going to suggest Doctor's Daughter.
That got 0 points.
Yes.
Oh God.
I'll give you both a clue. The remaining 3 are 2 one-parters and 1 two-parter.
Oh.
Okay. Voyage of the Damned?
Nope.
Oh my God, I'm having a shocker here.
Oh, okay. I'm going to see if I can go for that 2-parter, and I think The End of Time parts 1 and 2.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But no.
Oh. You just don't have any taste.
Oh, come on, guys, you're getting very, very cold here. Very cold indeed.
cold.
In fact, so cold that the headline of The Sun this morning was, "It's written."
All right, okay. So considering the ones I've gone for have all been... I'm going to go for one which I don't think has got no points. I'm going to use a bit of reverse psychology on this.
What, trick the keeper?
Yeah, I'm going to Penenka it down the middle, hopefully. I'm going to go for Rise of the Cybermen.
Well done.
You are kidding.
Rise of the Cybermen, Age of Steel, got no points.
You're joking.
That actually works.
What? That's bizarre. So, I kind of like that one. I don't... Right, okay.
Two left.
Unbelievable.
Two left, okay.
Right, now hang on. You have one more guess, Mark, and I'll start giving clues.
Okay, I'm going to go for the Shakespeare Code.
Nope. Right, clues. Okay. One is a Martha story and one is a Donna story. Donna's full season.
Oh, okay, right. Hang on, I think I know it. When you were given the clue earlier, I think I know what you're going for now. Cold. So it's a Christmas one. So is it... What about... Oh, I'm just... Okay, right, whatever. I want Christmas Invasion.
No.
No? Okay, what did you say? A Martha one? Yeah. Oh, God, I've been such an idiot. It's right there in the middle. The Lazarus Experiment.
Well done.
Oh, I forgot about that one, actually.
Well, exactly. It's like it's got a perception filter on.
Mark's leading 3-2. You've still got to find this cold one, Hayden, though. It's nothing to do with Christmas.
Oh, it's Planet of the Ood.
Well done.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's got you on 3-3. Isn't it nice when we finish nicely?
Nice that our mediocrity has drawn us level.
I know, yeah.
That's both games we've drawn tonight. I can't believe I didn't guess Lazarus Experiment much sooner. Because I've studiously avoided it on my rewatch. I just thought, I was just not watching that.
I'm going to open it now, the spreadsheet.
Right.
Oh, yes, you need to be able to see it, don't you?
Oh, God, look at that. Can I just say, just before we start, Doc, you utter conformist.
What?
You have 4 of your 5 top 5 have made the top 5.
I know, it's always you who do that.
Yeah, it is.
And it would have been 5 if someone hadn't put in their last votes at the last minute, you rotter, Mark. Mark, you knocked your vote for turn left, not Girl in the Fireplace, off 5th place.
Do you know what? That's so funny because Girl in Fireplace was probably about my 6th choice. So it very nearly made it in because I did that Metabilis 2 Doctor Who story preference revealer.
Oh, right,
as
yes.
As I usually do. So I've got all of mine ranked from 1 to whatever somewhere. I think
36. Gosh, that's that is brave.
That is.
So do we want to start counting down or do we want to start to just talk about it first?
Sorry, lads, sorry. I've just got a bit of bad news. Unfortunately, Smashy and Nicey, their hot air balloon has picked up a gust of wind and they're not going to be able to make it tonight.
Oh, no.
So, if you would be obliged, could I give it a go?
Oh, Lord. Do you want to count us down from 36 to 20, then, old soothsayer?
I can do that from 20 to 36. I can do that and not muck it up, sunshine. That's fine. Okay.
Fire away, then.
Are you sure you're not going to run out of throat by the time you...
The soothsayer to the background of a whole lot of love. This should be good.
Well, I say start at 36, actually. Start at the 6th ones currently tying in 31st place.
Let me just get the poll up. Oh, pardon my expression. Let me have a look at the poll. In the fire. Blow, blow. Blow, blow. Right, here we go then, lads. Right. Fire up the quattro, Raimondo.
Computer, could you add an appropriate backing track of music for the David Tennant era countdown, please? May well only be of significance to a certain generation of podcast listeners.
Tied number 29 is Daleks in Manhattan, an evolution of the Daleks. and the Sontaran stratagem and the poison sky on 1 point. On 28, it's the next Doctor with 2 points. Tied 26 is the Idiot's Lantern and the Sound of Drums and Last of the Time Lords with 4 points.
Was that Russell's horn?
Yes, it was. Can I talk quickly about Last of the Time Lords?
Of course you can.
Okay, this was around the era where I was still watching Who, but I was going out at the weekends and I'd had...
Oh, hang on, Hayden, not with your pulling scarf on.
And this was my... That's a true story. So, summer 2007, I'd finished work, and a friend who lived in the same town as where I used to work back then, and we were having a house party that night, and my then girlfriend was coming over, my friends and their girlfriends are all coming over too, and we all decided to sit down, half drunk, half cut, and watch The Last of the Time Lords, right? And I thought to myself, and I actually watched The Sound of Drums the previous week with one of the party attendees, and we both thought, oh, this isn't brilliant, but we'll see how this goes. Let's see how this lands. And I have honestly never been so embarrassed watching Doctor Who with a group of people in my life. It was awful. They were laughing at everything. And there was even the moment where my film studies friend Simon, who I was also in a band with at the time, said that at the moment when the Doctor and the Master are standing on the mountaintop and the Master's shouting to the sky, he says, any second now there's going to be a thunderclap to show how dramatic this moment is.
Oh no!
And there it was. And it was the hard reset button. It was the Dobby Doctor.
Oh, that was the point for me. I did rewatch this because, well, I find it hard to watch Utopia, and then, even though I know they're not as good, Sound of Drums and Last of the Time Lords. So I rewatched all three of those episodes. And I have to say, I was doing fine through the first two, and it is that last episode. It's that moment when that awful, tiny, goblin doctor comes out.
Dobby Doctor.
And I did even, I was sat doing something on my computer, I had that on the telly in the background, I was watching it, and I couldn't stop laughing and giggling, and that's not good. And it's
No, it's not.
Do you know what, I think there's lots of things that are really good in those last two episodes. I'm quite happy for John Simms' Master to be like that. I've got no problem with it. I really enjoyed it at the time. I really liked his Master. But it's just, it is just those decisions that they break the story for you, don't they? And that moment where everyone's chanting, Doctor, Doctor, as if he's Tinkerbell.
That would have been much better.
Then he does that thing that which they often do, which is that the 10th Christ Doctor, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
They love a bit of Christ Doctor, don't they? It quite often spoils an episode for me when he starts rising up with his arms out and stuff.
Well, during my drinking session with Terence Dix, he admitted that he thought...
Name dropper.
That he thought that...
Clang!
What, me or Terence Dix? I was drinking with Aidan Gwibble the other day, you know, I thought... He said to me, he said that was the aspect of the show he hated. He said, I don't like how he's a messiah. Because he wasn't, when we were making the show, he was a lost soul, you know, he was stuck on Earth. And then when he went out, he just got himself into trouble and helped out where he could. Which was a much better way of looking at it, I thought. I hated the whole Christ doctor.
Which is kind of what they tried to get back to with Capaldi, wasn't it?
I think it was.
He was like, I'm not a good man, I'm not a bad man, I'm just an idiot in a box.
Well, exactly.
Who tries to help out where I can.
Can I just say, the moment, and this is where Russell T Davies has so much goodwill in the bank still, even though there are elements of this era that I really can't stand.
Yeah.
And with others too, because the moment when John Sim is strutting his stuff to I Can't Decide by Scissor Sisters made me think... Do you know what, if John Nathan Turner had done this with Anthony Ailey to Superman by Bucks Fizz, you know, it would have been laughed at by everybody in the world.
I seem to remember making the same comment after Missy was dabbing in one of the Stephen Moffat episodes, later episodes, and Missy was dabbing. And I said that'd be like trying to get Anthony Ainley doing the Macarena. Do you know what? I don't mind that. It kind of fits in with the era for me. It doesn't bother me at all. It fits in with the era.
It's awful.
No, I give it a complete pass. I disagree with you on that.
It's awful.
I'll tell you how bad it is. It's the only one of Russell T. Davies' stories, in my opinion, containing a Chibnall-esque line and its clunkiness, which is the whole point about, you know, when they're all clapping hands for Tinkerbell. The Doctor says,
I've had a whole year to tune myself into the psychic network and integrate with its matrices.
And it's just pretty dreadful, isn't it? But, you know, you were saying the Doctor and the Master on a mountaintop. That's quite significant, because Utopia is on the mountaintop, isn't it? And then suddenly it just falls over a cliff.
Yeah.
It's quite extraordinary. Actually, I quite like the Scissor Sisters bit.
Yeah, me too.
Awful. What's wrong with you two?
Oh, it's just great. Well, I like it because it's... I think it just suits that Master, to be honest.
I mean, it's the same as to me as Capaldi coming out on the tank playing his guitar in the Magician's Apprentice. It's just...
Sorry, at this point, can I just... one of my friends who listens to the podcast said something very funny to me the other day.
Is this Nick?
Yes, it is Nick. And, hello, Nick.
Microphone Jack Nick.
Yeah. He's probably just drifting off to sleep now. I hope he doesn't mind me saying. But he does listen to the podcast. He listened to one of the more recent ones we did. I think Hayden was talking about his watch through the Season 17 box set.
Oh, no. Hang on, let me brace myself.
And my friend chatted to him, and he said to me, you know, Hayden, does he even like Doctor Who? And I thought that was so funny because in my head, it's always me and Doc who are like being slagging
yes,
off. It's
exactly.
Always you who's trying to be positive and nice. Yeah, he was like, does Hayden even like the show?
But Mark, I'm a Doctor Who fan. Of course I don't like Doctor Who.
marvellous. Sorry, anyway, carry on.
It's just that there's some moments in Who that really rile me. I mean, to be honest, this moment for me is a bit like Russell T. Davies breaking into my house and moonwalking on the fresh, clean, crisp carpet that's just been laid that day. And he's just got all manners of filth on the underside of his shoes. And then as he walks out, he's got a blocked nose as well. But he hasn't got a tissue, so he just like shoots like a footballer does out of one nostril onto my new carpet and leaves again. And that's exactly how this moment is for me. But there we are. Right, ready, Soothsayer?
Fire away, Soothsayer.
Right, tied at number 23 it's a triple header here, lads. It's The Runaway Bride, Voyage of the Damned, and a Shakespeare Code on 8 points.
Can't just say with those. I think that's. I'm surprised at The Runaway Bride, but I guess Donna wasn't quite the settled character she is in series four, is she? So
no.
But also, and I think maybe those episodes are just stories that are kind of they're okay. So they'd be a lot of people. You know, a lot of people might have them just outside of their top 10 and stuff, but they won't make it into a lot of people's top fives.
No.
Well, they clearly haven't. So.
No.
In number 22nd position, we have 42 with 9 points. And in number 19, tied 3 ways again, Sunshine, on 10 points, are The Partners in Crime, The End of Time, Parts 1 and 2, and The Christmas Invasion.
Oh, there we go. I think everyone's got something to say. The End of Time, Parts 1 and 2 are, honestly, one of the reasons why I had a bit of doubt about Russell T. Davies coming back to Doctor Who. It is the most self-indulgent tripe I think the show has ever put out. I think David Tennant, this was at the point of Tennant mania or Tennant fatigue, as I think a lot of people pointed out. He was on everything that Christmas. If he wasn't on a programme, he was on the iDents. If he wasn't on the iDents, he was in a programme. It was too much.
Oh, was this and when it, he was riding the TARDIS with reindeer on the ident.
Which would have been fine if he hadn't have also been in the Catherine Tate Show, QI, and a whole host of other things going on that year.
Never mind the Buzzcocks.
Never mind the Buzzcocks as well. It was too much. And not only that, but I also think the bravest thing this episode could have done was when the Doctor is in the booth, you know, and he's just saved Wilf, when he falls to the ground and he puts his hands over his head in pain and he's on the floor, at that moment Matt Smith should have sprung up. That would have been such a bold moment.
Yes, I thought that when I was rewatching that scene.
Yeah, that should have been such a bold moment. You shouldn't then have a moment where, oh, his scars all heal and he's got time to change his suit and he's got time to go back and visit all of his companions who he only saw a few episodes ago anyway. You know, it was the biggest, and the problem was as well, it was dangerous, I think, for the future of Doctor Who, because it was setting the next era up for a fall. It was almost saying, you're not going to beat this, we're going to throw everything but the kitchen sink at this.
Yeah.
And when I read the writer's tale, I was imploring Benjamin Cook in his responses to write back, don't you think this is a little bit too much, Russell? You know, the show is king, not the person who's the Doctor at the time, not the person in charge of the show at the time. This set a precedent after this that the outgoing Doctor needs presence before he leaves, or the showrunner just before he leaves needs to write long soliloquies about what an awesome job this thing is. It's bollocks. They did. They did it with Peter Capaldi's speech, didn't he, at the end?
Like either. Amy came back into the TARDIS, didn't she?
Yeah.
Which effectively says to Clara, who's the companion at the time, sod off, Amy was more popular than you are.
Yeah.
The funniest thing about that ending that's been making me chuckle while you've been talking about that is the thought that if... I've seen people point this out, so it's not my idea, but it made me laugh when I saw it on Twitter. Somebody said, if that had been... Jodie Whittaker's Doctor, she's gone, oh, thanks, Wilf, just jump in the TARDIS and bug it off.
She would have done.
Nice one. Cheers.
And it was the epitome of everything I don't like about this Doctor. It was the self-pitying, the where's my reward?
Yes.
The whole, I don't want to go. Yeah. It was so, oh, please. You know, the bit was sitting in the cafe. And going, even if I walk away, it feels like I'm going to die. Some other man walks off in my body, and I'm nowhere. It's just like, oh, pour me another one. This isn't what the Doctor is to me. And I know this was a conscious decision from Russell T. Davies to write a self-pitying, vain, and at times unbearable Doctor. And my problem with the 10th Doctor has never been David Tennant. It's been the characterisation of the 10th Doctor. It's the writing decisions behind it.
And the mythologising.
Yes, It's the bigging him up to be something that... Yeah, okay, he has very heroic moments. He has moments later on in this poll which are fantastic. But this is just bringing him down to a level he's never been before. I remember texting someone at the time saying... Are you getting this? And she said, yes. Has Matt Smith turned up yet? When's he going to turn up? Because we were just kind of waiting for him to come along, because it just felt like the new broom needed to come through. It was so self-aggrandizing as well. Self-indulgent. Mm. It was appalling. It was really bad.
That is, again, a bit like the Christ Doctor thing we get quite often. That's mythologizing and, like you say, the sort of setting the Doctor up as a god. Is hugely frustrating throughout both Russell T. Davies's and Stephen Moffat's era. And it does ruin some stories. Like one of the stories that was almost in my top five dropped out simply because, well, it was Human Nature, Family of Blood, which I did have in my top five because I think it's a damn good story. But it's towards the end of it when that psychic kid starts saying,
yes,
oh, I saw him, he was fire, and he's all this, and
he burns the centre of time, and he's,
oh god, yeah,
because I've seen him, he's like fire and ice and rage, he's like the night and the storm and the heart of the sun. Stop it. He's ancient and forever. He burns at the centre of time and he can see the turn of the universe.
Stop it, I said stop it.
And he's wonderful.
Actually, I quite like that. Makes my hair stand on end. That's entirely bad with it.
Okay, but for me, it felt a bit like too much, like a part of the.
You're crackling, Mark.
Oh, thank you. It felt a bit like the. It felt a bit like the, an early foray into that, and then even his rage at the end. The Doctor wasn't running away from them because he was afraid of them. He was running away from them to be kind, and like his sort of big godlike punishments of what he does to the family of blood. And it's
I mean, who is he? Zeus? I mean, yeah, for God's sake, it's just ridiculous.
It's all a bit Prometheus, isn't it? As well, he's because they. And is that what you're referring to with that? Like Prometheus being punished to have his liver eaten out every day.
Yeah,
and it grows back. And it's very much like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So is that how you felt rewatching The Deadly Tenetier, Mark?
No, actually, I'm going to say some. I'm probably going to say more nice things about it, I suspect.
I should call this proper podcast. What's that story? Who wrote Prometheus Unbound, isn't it? Prometheus Rewatched. Hayden, what did you call the end of time in the annals of regeneration stories?
In the annals of regeneration stories, I believe, Mark. It was the skid mark of regeneration stories. You know when Tom Baker was at his peak and he was getting away with murder during the Graham Williams era? It kind of reminds me of this, actually. There's no one telling them, I think this needs another look.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with this. It's the manifestation of everything negative about the Tenth Doctor for me.
I think that's very apposite, actually, because, you know, commercial companies, if they're going to do two Doctor Who teddy bears, they do like a Tom Baker and a David Tennant one.
Yeah.
You know, because they are the biggest stars of their respective runs. They resonate with the public.
I have a problem with that. You won't be surprised to know that David Tennant's the one that people are pulled to. Not because of David Tennant himself, it's because of the characterisation of the Tenth Doctor. So what we're saying is that the best and most loved incarnation of the Doctor from the modern era is the most vain, selfish, just... It's almost like the Boris Johnson analogy, the whole pop, you know, the populism. Got to be doing things and saying certain things to be popular. Do you know what I mean? To have the popular vote. David Tennant's the populist Doctor for me.
Well, I'd say it's David Tennant's incredibly charismatic. And perhaps perhaps it's also reached that point now that a lot of the people who grew up with David Tennant are now young adults. So they're the ones who you see a lot on social media.
But isn't that a bit of an issue with the wider public in general, that that's the Doctor that they pick out to be the most popular, is the one who's got the most character flaws? That has never sat right. Tom Baker, you can never say was vain. You can never say he was outwardly selfish. You can never say he was cruel, really. That's why it's never sat comfortably with me, this whole glorification of the Tenth Doctor.
Like the end of Human H, Family of Blood, where he's angry and he's in a rage, and so he punishes these people to eternal... He basically banishes these people to a living hell.
Yeah, he does.
For eternity, which
is horrible. He's not nice.
No.
This is the Doctor who's centuries years old and falls in love with a late teen in Rose. That's never sat well with him. He then treats Martha badly next time round. He only works with Donna because Donna's telling him to shut up or keeping him in line. And that's the only point when I can actually watch his Doctor and find him enjoyable. When he isn't the smug Noel that he is with Rose, or the dour, you're not as good as my last girlfriend with Martha, and then mistreating her the whole time. It's only when a slightly older, more authoritative and sure in herself woman comes along that she keeps him in line, that I can actually watch him and think, I'm actually enjoying this Doctor's adventures now. Oh, for him. I don't mean the actual event, because I don't think there's any doubting that the actual writing series here is very good. And the realisation of the show is really good too. But it's the actual characterisation of him. It's always made me feel quite awkward that that these negative character traits are the ones that either people choose to ignore or the ones that people glorify. The whole Doctor and Rose thing, I'm sorry, you know, I was 17 when that series came out, so possibly just a bit too old for the target audience, perhaps. Or maybe I was in the target audience, I don't know. I found it odd then. I didn't like it, because I thought essentially this is William Hartnell here. And if it was William Hartnell in the role, you know, doing this, it would look really wrong. The fact that it's a guy who was in his mid-30s with a haircut that people seem to think was sexy seemed to sort of get him away from the fact that this character was 900 years old and was in love with a teenager. Okay, I suppose, yeah, a teenager of consenting age, but at the same time, you know, everyone winced when Catherine Zeta-Jones married Michael Douglas, even though she was an adult.
Well, it's a bit like that time that elf woman married Aragorn. She's like 3,000. He's only 80.
Well, there we are.
Shocking.
He's only 80. Yeah, but you know what I mean, Mark. I mean, come on. It's not.
No, I know. I agree.
Yeah, it's just, it's not. I've never liked that aspect of the writing of the character. And, oh, I don't know.
The weirdest thing about that marrying elves in that is that if you think about it in Lord of the Rings, Galadriel is Elrond's mother-in-law.
Explain that away with Lord of the Rings is that we are a lot further removed from political correctness with J.R. Tolkien's work, aren't we?
It was a different time.
It was a different time. Just like Top of the Pops. No, it's, I don't know. But it's awkward.
Yeah, should we move on up?
I've got Nick's words echoing in my ear now. Damn you, Nick.
Actually, isn't it interesting that we've reached 18 and we're still only on 11 points?
Yeah.
And it's really, well, we'll say it's when we reach, it's only really when we get to the top four that anything goes above 100 points.
Mm. Oh, really? Is it quite top heavy then?
So, what's at number 18, I'll just say?
At number 18, it's Love and Monsters with 11 points.
Love and Monsters, I'm not quite sure why people get so upset about it. I like it. I'm quite a big fan of all the Doctor Light episodes, I think.
What, because they're Doctor Light?
Well, who knows? Perhaps there's something, I don't know, it's just kind of nice to, because it's like seeing the Doctor from a removed point that we're used to, so it's nice to see other people getting on with their lives in the world, in the Doctor Who universe.
Before he ruins them.
Yeah, and then the Doctor just sort of coming in and out of focus as the story goes on. I enjoy that. And I think there's a lot of heart in Love and Monsters.
Yes, I think it's lovely.
And the only thing with that is it's obviously just spoilt by that really crass joke at the end, really. Which is just...
Touching.
But I really enjoy it because I
thought that was...
Touching.
Touching.
Craig, I think it's probably the only second time I've watched this, and I thought it was crass.
Sorry, Josh, before you go any further, just because it's just popped into my head, and you might not want to broadcast this, but a friend of mine... I was in sixth form during that series, and I said to my friend, did you watch Doctor Who at the weekend? He went, oh, you mean? And he got his pen and paper and drew a stick person f***ing a pavement slab.
It's touching.
So, Love and Monsters is at number 18, old soothsayer.
And at number... Oh, hang on, the fire's dying. Let me just... There we go. It's back up again. At number 17, it's Smith and Jones on 13 points. And on 16, it's Tooth and Claw with 14 points. Number 15, it's Army of Ghosts. Woo. And Doomsday with 17 points.
Hark, do I hear the cry of the Horn of Rassilon?
Quite possibly the last season finale to date that wasn't completely overblown and ridiculous, because I think from here on in, with Last of the Time Lords, Journey's End, I think RTD completely lets rip with... He starts believing the show's own publicity, I think, and it becomes nonsense.
Well, I think it's that snowball effect, isn't it? I've got to top the last finale.
Yes.
And you can't keep doing that and make the stories reasonable. It's...
What was the 14 soothsayer?
It was the fires of Pompeii, which I lived through, of course. You do remember
that. Nice tribute to anyone who watched, who sat through the Cambridge Latin course at school.
I actually voted for the fires of Pompeii in my top five.
Oh, yes, you did.
Oh, did you? Where did it come in your top five?
It was, second. Let me have a look. Second? No, hang on, was it? It was. Did I vote it second?
Really? It's your second favourite David Tennant story?
I don't think it was, Doc. Hang on a minute. Oh, God, it was.
No, second, hasn't it? Second.
No,
2 points.
It's on 2 points, so that's my fourth.
Oh, right, so it's fourth. But even so.
Yeah.
It's not that daft.
I think it was a really brave move to have such a serious and thought-provoking episode as the second story of the season, actually.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because for all its fun, because there's quite a lot of fun in there, the whole, you know, the speaking with Phil Cornwell in the streets where he thinks she's speaking, may I speak
Celtic. There's
no Celtic. I enjoyed that, and I enjoyed... Yeah, I'm Spartacus, and this is Mrs. Spartacus. I mean, it's an obvious thing to do. Brilliant. But no, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, Donna questions quite rightly, well, why can't you save it? Why is this a fixed point in time? Why can't you warn people? And then she's obviously trying to, isn't she, throughout it?
Yeah.
And he keeps warning her, and then they realise the choice he has to make. It's either the planet will burn or Pompeii will burn. And it's almost that impossible choice that she helps him to make. And it's the absolute anguish and the defeatist look in the eyes of Catherine Tate when she's screaming at him in the TARDIS, saying, please just save someone, whilst the Doctor's looking quite resentful, not at her, but at his own actions and disgusted at what he's had to do, but knowing he's had to do it. You know, he's part of the fixed point. Of course, you've got the whole continuity of this whole act is the reason why the 12th Doctor looks the way he looks, and Karen Gillan's in it as one of the Sisterhood of Khan. I mean, the Sisterhood of Pompeii, or whatever you call them. I think the Pyrovile is quite effective too. And Phil Davis is good as the sort of half-deranged soothsayer of Pompeii too. It's just a really good script. And it's a good script. It balances the tone of heaviness and lightness really well. And when I watched it again, it was a real stand for me. I really enjoyed it. So it's if we were to do an episode on it at some point, I'd be happy to. I really liked it. And David Tennant was really good. Well, you know, the Tenth Doctor was really good in it, I should say. He was fun and cheeky and playful when he needed to be. And he was dour and serious and quite heartbreaking at other moments too. In the right way. And I don't mean by standing in the rain looking wet and sad. I mean actually by, you know, the fact that thousands of people are going to die at his hand. Again. Yeah, brilliant.
What give it number 13, Soothsayer?
At number 13, it was the Unicorn and the Wasp on 25. At number 12, and I think you boys have reviewed this in the past, it's Gridlock with 33.
Gridlock.
And a gap opening up here at number 11, it's Utopia on 51.
Doing the rounds tonight.
Yeah,
isn't
I know.
It? Yeah. Yeah, just a quick thing. I just think Utopia's... It made it into my top five. It was number five. Even rewatching it, as I did a couple of days ago, I still sends shivers down my spine there towards the end. Even though I know what's coming. In fact, it almost makes it worse. Yeah. I start getting this kind of, oh, God, this is it.
Or when Martha's turning the watch over and realises what she
is. Yeah. It's just like, oh, my... Even knowing full well what's going to happen. I think the direction, the production, the acting... The music, everything on it, the scripting, it's all so beautifully done. It still gets me going, oh, this is, I can't believe this is happening.
It's the deadness in Derek Jacobi's eyes when he turns around after the watch has been opened.
Which is brilliant. It's a really good performance by Derek Jacobi. He's really good.
That was such woke casting a gay actor.
I noticed recently they cast a gay footballer.
It's a box-ticking exercise. They had to cast a gay actor and also an older actor because there weren't enough old people in it. So, I don't know. What's the BBC come to?
Political correctness gone mad. But yeah, Utopia is just great. Derek Jacobi performance. I mean, the future kind of a bit kind of, you know, kind of just chucked in, aren't they? Kind of cliche sort of sub-Mad Max kind of thing. And I don't like the performance by the extras in it, who are all like, I don't mean to be rude to these people, but they're clearly extras, monster actors, but you can see too much of their faces and they're too much, it's too camp and I don't know, it's a bit too choreographed, like, oh, I'm a wild person from the future, blah, blah, and it's like...
You know the man who they're chasing right at the start?
Oh, yes.
Around this time, I went to a Spurs match at White Hart Lane, and he was sitting right next to me.
God, was she think he found the more horrific experience? Oh, God!
I just took a mouthful of my...
Oh, sorry,
when you said that.
I'm so pleased you're choking on your life. I have an abiding memory of the next day after this. My dad was driving me and a friend to my first ever gig, and that was at Muse at Wembley Stadium. And all the way in the car, my dad was eulogising about this, saying how fantastic it was and how he never saw the whole Yana thing coming and the fog watch and thought how brilliantly plotted it was. And it was. This was the cliff edge that Last of the Time Lords fell off, basically. You were right, Doc.
So we're in the top 10 from now, old soothsayer.
In the number 10 now, it's The Stolen Earth and Journey's End on 3 points. At number 9, we've got School Reunion. What's the school? I never heard of it. With 70 points. At number 8, it's The Walters and Mars with 80. Number 7, it's Silence in the Library and Forest of the Dead on 89 points. And beating it by a point to number 6 place is The Girl in the Fireplace with 90 points.
Yes, I think we missed out saying that Mark puts Utopia in his 5th place and School Reunion in his 3rd place.
Yep.
Mark gave Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead 4th place, Hard Maiden, I put gave it 5th place. And Girl in the Fireplace was safely in the top 5 until Mark... 5 minutes before we started, put his votes in and knocked it out by 1 point.
Which is funny because Girl in the Fireplace did come up 6th on my preference revealer, so it very nearly made it in. I'm slightly surprised School Reunion didn't get into the top 5 because I thought perhaps with the love... For me, it's not just the nostalgia thing of having Sarah Jane coming back. I mean, I found that really quite... moving when I first saw it, and I still do, to be honest. I guess now that she's passed, and I'm such a huge K-9 fan that it was having K-9 back in Doctor Who just made me so. I was beyond excited.
I think we are quite squashed in perhaps towards the top 6 or the top 7, 8, or 9. I think are all fairly squashed up. That's when we start hitting the highest numbers. But it's one of those where, I think School Reunion is one of those where you put it in, and, oh, it's number 2 or number 3 for me. And then you start thinking, oh, actually,
there
is this
down.
And there is that.
Yeah, I do wonder if actually the quality of the rest of the story does perhaps let it down a bit. It still feels very early Russell T. Davis Doctor Who, doesn't it? Mind you, I haven't said that for Series 1 is an absolute cracker. So.
But the whole concept of the Skasis paradigm in the second half, which is what the Kurosanes are trying to crack, is a concept which is worthy of an episode in itself. The code that holds the key to the universe. Why have they never revisited that?
I do think there's some great bits in it. I think Rose as a dinner lady is quite amusing. And the other point of nostalgia that I have with it is it comes from Series 2, which I've watched a lot with my daughter Polly, and especially the opening few stories of Series 2. So that's always been one of our favourites.
Let's just pause before we hit the top 5, just for general. What I was going to say at the beginning, I thought during the Chris Chibnall era, the current era of the show, it's become rather a chore for me watching Doctor Who. And I was thinking, oh, God, I don't have particularly good memories of David Tennant era. But re-watching it for this retrospective of the last couple of weeks, I really enjoyed most of it, which really surprised me, which I didn't upon original broadcast. I enjoyed stories which I was watching for only the second time ever, like the Manhattan two-parter. I enjoyed, despite probably one of the people who gave Helen Rayner a near heart attack, according to Russell T. Davis. Love and Monsters. Idiot's Lantern. I enjoyed. When I was watching this at the time, I thought, oh, Lord, I don't like this. Martha, as a companion. I really, really started seeing good things in her. Having thought at the time, oh, she's constantly moaning about Bloody Rose, isn't she? Planet of the Dead I liked. Silence in the Library, which I'm not sure whether I never watched that again because I didn't like it, or because on first viewing I just didn't understand it was too complicated for me. And now I started wondering, am I only liking this because I'm compared to what I've had to sit through for the last 4 years? It's like going back to a second golden age for me. But I also wonder if this is what happened at the time. Is Jodie suffering from what perhaps we did to, not David, but to the character that he was playing, that we get so irritated by some of the crap in it that we start to fixate on it and we miss the goodness?
It's possible, because when I've gone back and rewatched this era, there's been episodes that I didn't think had anything really to offer. And yet there's still been quite a lot to enjoy in them. And whether or not it's jokes, performances, you know, just little bits, even if maybe the rest of the story's been a bit poop, or... I mean, certainly there's stories like that in Series 4 where it's the chemistry between David Tennant and Catherine Tate. And it is Donna Noble, really, that a lot of the time that just really, really lifts the stories up.
Yeah.
And I agree with regards to Martha as well. There is a lot more to her than remains on the surface of your memory, isn't there? There's stuff beneath that. I mean, it's still irritating how she's made to sort of moon after the Doctor, but she does it, do it in quite a grumpy way sometimes, and a bit kind of... And that's good, and she has a good... Well, not her final scene, but at the end of her series, Series 3, you know, she takes control and she has agency. And I think there's all these little things that are positives that in otherwise... We are finding stuff to enjoy that we weren't expecting to. I don't know how you feel, Hayden. Do you feel you found more to enjoy than you were expecting? Or have you found that you hate it with all your black Doctor Who hating heart as much as ever?
With the heat of a thousand suns. Like on Bad Wolf Bay, you hate to say, I'm burning up a sun just to slack off David Tennant's hero.
I think... For me, it was always an era where I could equal part like it and equal part loathe it, I think, actually, because there's some really good parts in here, which you could say is the creme de la creme of modern Who. But then there's other aspects, like I said, the characterisation of the Doctor at the time is just shocking.
One of the things I find about this era, about the RTD era in general, it's hard not to compare it to an era we've just been watching, obviously. And that's always a problem when we're doing these retrospectives. But I do think the peaks are so high for some of these stories.
Yes, they are.
I mean, one thing that this era doesn't fail to do, and it's the same with, in fact, actually with Series 1 as well, is I'm like putty in its hands in some episodes.
Yeah.
It pushes emotional buttons just so almost cynically and deftly that I have no hope of resisting. I think, what was it? It was, it's one of the stories coming up in a minute. Is I was watching it today and I could feel myself just going and sort of tears coming down my cheeks and stuff. And it happens quite a lot during the RTD era. He absolutely knows. I know people take the piss out of Murray Gold, don't they? And say, oh, the music's telling me to feel this.
Yeah.
But actually, I think that's... But
it's very good during this era.
Yeah.
He's very good. He really is. If I just skip ahead slightly, just for instance, just like a bit of music that he does over a couple of minutes, towards the end of Turn Left, and there's the bit where Rose is explaining to Donna what she has to do. They're stood there, they've got those mirrors around, and they're putting that jacket on her, and they're explaining what she's got to do and how she's got to get back in time. And Don's saying, yeah, I'll just run up and have a good old argument with myself. And the music in the background is like really stirring and like pacey and like da 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 da. It feels exciting and like Donna's going to go back and sort this out. And then there's this that moment where she realises that she's going to, that means that she will stop existing because she's a Donna from a parallel universe. So if she succeeds, that's it. She ceases to exist. So she dies so that the other Donna can meet the Doctor. And the music just suddenly sort of crashes almost.
Yeah,
and comes
it does.
To her. It is superbly done.
Because I understand now. You said I was going to die, but you mean this whole world is going to blink out of existence. But that's not dying. Because a better world takes its place. The Doctor's world. And I'm still alive. That's right, isn't it? I don't die. If I change things, I don't die. That's right, isn't it?
Sorry.
But I can't die! I've got a future! With the Doctor, you told me!
There's some beautiful music in this.
Yeah.
This is almost like another lifetime, this is. This was the era of the Doctor Who proms every year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
And it's just got some really big, bold, moving pieces of music. And some really subtle stuff as well. It's got a lot of very subtle stuff that Murray Gold doesn't often get credit for. I think he's, like I say, a lot of people like to characterise him as someone who just does big, brash, this is how you must feel music. But it's not just that. I think he's more skilled than that. And can I just say while I'm at it as well, the theme tune, you get a cold open, something dramatic happens in the cold open, the theme tune crashes in, it's incredibly exciting. You just think, yeah. I mean, where was the recent era? Something happens in the cold open, it's kind of exciting, and then in comes the theme tune.
Yes,
and it's like, what? Pardon? And it's like, what's going on? Why aren't you... Whereas the David Tennant one is... It's like, wow. And it's like, here we go.
It's got the sting.
Yeah, and there's just no... people are going about Sagan Akinola. Oh, isn't his... His theme music great, isn't it brilliant? Oh, it's amazing. And it's like, it's not, it's like dull and muddy, and he's taken all the he's taken all the impact and dynamism out of it. It might be cleverly done, but it's just what? Just no. Anyway. Sorry, so
I think it was Murray Gold at the height, still at the height of his powers. Things like All the Strange Creatures.
Yes.
This is Gallifrey as well.
What I love in Martha's series is the Doctor Forever. There's a bit at the end of, well, I'll come on to this when we go into the top five. But I tried to think, is there actually some clear differences that I can find between David's era and Jodie's so I can convince myself I'm not being specifically unfair to her? And even when I'm thinking, oh, it's a bit annoying there, or Martha's or John the Speaker, but it's annoying. I found myself effortlessly being carried along by the stories.
Mm.
There's an energy to the show, a vitality to it.
Yeah, a sense of adventure, isn't there? Of events moving on.
That's the thing for me, that's its saving grace in the moments where I'm not enjoying a certain character, let's say, for example.
Yeah.
It's actually the stories carrying me through. And that's because I do think, even though Ross T. Davies isn't the best writer the Doctor Who's ever had, I think he might be the best showrunner it's had.
Yeah.
Because he made the decisions, okay, I didn't completely agree with them, but he made them to make Doctor Who popular and to make it liked by the vast non-wee out there. And it worked. And for that, he succeeded. So you can't really grumble with that, to be fair.
At this stage, we didn't know. We hadn't started this thing that Stephen Moffat started, had they, of saying, well, if I'm going to do some work on this writer's first draft, I'm going to put my name onto the by so-and-so and Stephen Moffat.
Yeah.
Whereas Artie never did that, so we never actually knew how much input he had. But I think you can see it in all the characters in his era have their own fleshed-out personalities.
Mm.
Yeah.
But you can't see how it's done. It's not like we sometimes think of Murray Gold. Oh, he's played that little trick, you know, to flesh out the character. I'm sure someone who's a professional writer will probably be able to see these things. But you get things like all those little cars stuck in the motorway in Gridlock.
Mm.
You can actually believe that all the people in there are real people.
Yes.
With real lives. Which is ought to be doubly difficult because they're all just in pairs, aren't they? They've not got loads of other people to talk to. Martha, as I say, she seems far better to me. But I think she's dictated by the writing. I don't think she's ever bad. But when the Doctor mentions Rose and she goes, oh, good old Rose. Oh, she's blonde, is she? She just immediately becomes weaker. Just because they're... Not because she's playing her weaker, but because they've written her weaker.
Yes.
I mean, she's doing this already by Shakespeare code. Well, this is only her second story. How come she's fallen for the Doctor already?
And he's such a dick to her, isn't he?
But she has great moments. In fact, not just great moments, but great stretches in Series 3. The Manhattan two-parter, Lazarus Experiment, even 42, the Human Nature two-parter. She's got real agency and she's driving the story. And I love her in this. Donna, knowing for much of this rewatch that she's going to be returning soon, I had hoped I'd grow to like Donna, but I think I was instantly against her from the original Runaway Bride, where she's a honking, shouty fishwife. And when they announced her return at the beginning of Series 4, I dreaded it. And I think I've come to the conclusion that throughout her time in Doctor Who, Donna is quite dreadful with occasional pleasant interludes. And she becomes... I know you're going to disagree with this. I'll let you. But she becomes another of those companions like Yaz, where we're having to be told how amazing she is. You're amazing. You're the most important woman in the universe. If only I could have been given the memory wipe. And I think the problem is she's being written as an amalgam of the characters from her comedy shows. She's crossing Lauren and Angry Gran, shouty and cross, so she's written as a character of overblown comedy. Perhaps because that suits her acting style. But when you get lines like, a mate, you want a mate, other lines like,
oh, sack one of this lot. Sack Cliff. He just sits there. Don't know what he does all day. Sorry, Cliff. Actually, I'm not sorry. What do you do all day?
And she's just being, with very few exceptions, downright unpleasant to everyone, except her grandfather. I mean, this is slightly going into the top five, but which other companion would behave as Don does in Turn Left, where half the country's evacuated and she's doing her honking fishwife at people? That's a Vera Duckworth.
Don't get all chippy with me, Vera Duckworth. Pop your clogs on and go pig whipping.
The admittedly slightly annoying Italian guy who's singing, she's calling him Mussolini.
Now listen, Mussolini, I am telling you for the last time to button it.
Clearly this is meant to be hilarious, but possibly only for people who are watching in order to see Catherine Tate.
See, in that scene though, Doc, she's like immediately sees her granddad, Wilf, sat there enjoying himself, and she changes completely. Next thing, she's joined them, and she's singing along and having a great time.
Doesn't make up for it for me.
Oh, well, it does for me, totally. Because for me, I don't see her as being... You seem to see her as a lot more one-dimensional than I do.
That's how she comes across to me,
yeah. Yeah, see, she doesn't to me. I thought there was... Yeah, there are those comedy moments, which I think obviously have been written in because it's Catherine Tate. And she's got the skill to deliver them, and because that's what she's known for. And so, yeah, there, it is kind of give the audience what they want. But I think she's great. I mean, it's always fun just when she goes,
"Well, isn't that wizard?"
Absolutely cracks me up. And I thought her Vera Duckworth stuff, the woman, was quite funny. And see, I am amused by that stuff. But I think she's also got a much wider range than you're giving her credit for. I think the scenes in... I know, I'm straying to turn left again, but some of the scenes in that, when she's sort of saying goodbye to the Italian guy before she realises quite what's going on, and then when she does and she chases after them. And she has these quiet moments, and I just think she's a lot better than you give credit for. I think she's amazing in Silence in the Library.
Actually, she isn't bad in that. She's nice to Mr. Evangelista, isn't she?
I think she's fantastic. And in Turn Left as well, when she's that bit towards the end where she realises she's going to die. And it's just, I think her acting's excellent. I think she's a really fine actress.
I was just hoping that when she and David Tennant return about a year's time, he's learned to act more subtly and she's learned to act full stop.
Oh. that's
harsh,
but see, I think she's good. I think she's really good. I think her quietness contrast when she chooses to do that feels more powerful because of the kind of it feels like Donna Noble has a lot of front and is like kind of, and she's great in The Unicorn and the Wasp as well. She's really good in that.
Go on, Hayden, support me. Tell me what a bitch Donna is.
I've already said I think Donna's the best companion that he's partnered with.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, God.
Ah.
Right, so let's go into the top five, shall we?
At number five, cracking into number five now, it's Turn Left on 91 points. Then on number four, it's The Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit on 110. At number three, it's Midnight on 113. At number two, in runner-up spot is Blink on 172. In number one, the glorious 10th Doctor best story as voted for by you is Human Nature and the Family of Blood on 209 points.
Wow.
Yes, it was Mark putting Turn Left in first place is what knocked Girl in the Fireplace off fifth spot. Hayden and I put Impossible Planet, Satan Pit in our first place.
That was going to be in my top five. When I did the rewatch, I thought this is definitely top five. This is excellent. But it just drifted out a bit slightly.
There are ones where, I mean, I think possibly, certainly Blink and Human Nature and Midnight, I think are finer stories. But it just carries me away, just loving it so much, The Impossible Planet, Satan Pit.
Mm.
Midnight I put second. Blink, Mark and Hayden put second. I put it fourth.
Rebel.
And Hayden and I put Human Nature, Family of Blood in third place.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, I find it ironic that the two best David Tennant episodes that always come up, always, it's always Blink and Human Nature, they're always the top two, and they're the two episodes that the 10th Doctor barely appears in. And it's also interesting as well that in the third...
And Turn Left as well.
And Turn Left, yeah. And in, to complete the top three for us, is the episode where the 10th Doctor shows off a bit too much, is a bit too clever for his own good, and ends up nearly being thrown out into space by the people he's trapped with. Which I feel is a fantastic example of my feelings towards the 10th Doctor.
I have to say, I think all the ones that made it into the top eight or nine now, they're all good. They're really good David Tennant performances, aren't they? That's the other thing.
Yeah, they are.
There's no doubt he can put in a performance.
Yeah.
And Yeah, Human Nature, Family Blood, I think he's particularly good in. That was another one that was always going to be in my top five. I mean, my top five could quite easily have... I mean, my top five was Turn Left, Blink, School Reunion, Science in the Library, Forest of the Dead, Utopia. And it could quite easily have been The Girl in the Fireplace, Human Nature, The Family Blood, The Impossible Planet, The Satan Pit, Love of Monsters, and probably Blink or Turn Left. So it could easily have been that. It's just... Let's say the peaks are really solid, aren't they?
Midnight, I think, is an extraordinary story. You watch that.
Oh, freaks me out, Midnight.
And the bit where you know that all the other people in the cab with the doctor are... You can see what RTD's doing, where they're turning on him. And with one, I think one exception, where one of the women says, an alien, who's that, like an immigrant? Which I think sounds a bit too over the top to be...
Is it a bit too much like Ace? The white boys burned it down.
I think it's utterly glorious. And I sit watching that on the edge of it, pooing my pants. I think it's a brilliant story, that. Yeah. It's only because it's so scary, psychologically scary, that I don't watch as stuff as it deserves.
No, I didn't rewatch it purely for that reason, because I was running out of time and had to pick what I could watch. And the last time I watched it, I just feel it really unsettles me, like really deep, makes my stomach turn over a bit for some reason. I get a real visceral discomfort from it. I find it really jarring, which is probably why it didn't make it into my top five. But it's probably, as a piece of drama, it works fantastically.
It was the only one from this era that I actually missed on first broadcast, and I didn't get around to seeing it until probably when the DVD came out.
And of course, I think the best actor in it is, what's his name? Colin Thingy went on to play Merlin.
Oh, yes.
He's brilliant in that. Is that if you look at some of his acting, it's superbly naturalistic. Can't remember his name, but not to worry. I think I may have been tempted to put Blink at the top, but because I think it's just superbly different. But because this is a Dr. Light episode, I think I possibly marked it down a little, saying it would be unfair to say, oh, this is the high. Because, in fact, if we'd done that, we'd be saying, wouldn't we? And the best stories of all are the ones that David Tennant is in the least.
Oh, can I just say, with Blink, Carey Mulligan's just absolutely wonderful.
Isn't she?
Just brilliant. I mean, her acting as well, but it doesn't hurt that she's so incredibly cute and just...
I think the line with her in the hospital, it was raining the day we met, and it's the same
with
rain.
Billy.
It's a brilliant line.
Yeah, it's the same rain. Oh,
gosh. Extraordinary. There's some extraordinary dialogue in that episode. I mean, it's great, isn't it? Stephen Moffat in the RTD era is just absolutely an absolute monster.
It was raining when we met.
It's the same rain.
I love the ending of it, because as she's giving the saints, she meets the doctor in the street and says, oh, make sure you got this with you, and he gets lost. They're playing the Doctor Forever over it. And one of the things I like is that it would have been such a cliche for the Doctor and Martha to then run off, and then Lawrence turns up with the milk and misses it. But I like the fact, because actually he's been involved with the Doctor issue far longer than she has, hasn't she? And I like it how he turns up with the milk and his jaw drops. Because actually he's almost as good as Carey Mulligan is in this. Some of his stuff when he's, I think he could easily become, who's that character in one of the Notting Hill, where someone's in the very nice house is going around in his underpants.
Oh, Reese Iphens, yeah.
But when he's sitting cross-legged and he's writing down the other half of the conversation, he's coming out with stuff like, this is going to explode the egg forums. and stuff like that, I love that.
It's me. Sake, it was me all along. You got it all from me.
Got what?
Okay, listen. One day you're going to get stuck in 1969. Make sure you've got this with you. You're going to need it.
Doctor!
Yeah, listen. Gotta dash. Things happening. Well, four things. And a lizard.
Okay, No worries. On you go. See you around someday.
What was your name?
Sally Sparrow.
Good to meet you, Sally Sparrow.
Human nature, again, that's got an extraordinary ending. And it's something which could so easily have been screwed up. You know when they go and visit the young kid at the war memorial?
Yes.
When he's in a wheelchair. He looks to the side and they're just standing there watching him. And he meets their eyes. And Martha just turns and pins a poppy on the doctor's lapel. Yeah. And they just turn and look at him seriously. It could so easily, if someone had thought... I'll tell you what, at this point, let the doctor catch his eye and then wink at him and do that sort of, you know, it would have completely screwed that up.
Yeah.
But and that was another thing where they've got, they're playing the Doctor Forever over it. And that gets me crying.
Oh, her human nature always makes me teary as well. What's the actress's name? Jessica.
Oh, Jessica Hines.
Jessica Hines is so good in this. So wonderful. And when she delivers that line, when it's the doctor's back as the doctor and he goes to visit her, and she's finding it hard to even look at him. And she says...
Answer me this. Just one question. That's all. If the doctor never visited us... Never chosen this place on a whim. Would anyone here have died? You can go.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, the answer's absolutely no. And all those people who died, and it's just... Ah. And he looks ashamed, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, brilliant. I almost feel bad for not putting that in my top five now, but I'd say those peaks are so good, it's hard to choose.
And considering that it was all to do with war, what an extraordinary decision to be. Perhaps, is it possibly the only story in the David Tennant run where people aren't bloody saluting each other every 5 minutes? But I have to say that the Impossible Planet Satan pit had a sort of impact on me that... Empty Child Dr. Dancy's had when I first saw it. I thought, oh, this is delicious.
Mm.
All this stuff like, they find a language that's more ancient than the TARDIS. Stuff like this, you know, something that's happened prehistory ago. The letters appearing on Toby's skin. That's scary.
It's really unsettling, isn't it? Again.
Yeah.
It's like in that Midnight. I think I have a problem. I think I find possession stories particularly...
Yes, and you said this, yeah.
Distressing, because I kind of didn't give as many points to survival in the Sylvester era review, because I found the planet where people suddenly sort of get, I mean, they're not really getting possessed, but they're changing personality, you know, they're sort of becoming these monsters. I just find that really worrying. It's the sort of thing that makes me fill a boat.
I think it's the second best two-parter of Modern Who.
Mm, yeah.
I've spoke quite a lot about that one in the past, but I love it.
Like in Gridlock, all the crew on that sanctuary base, within a few minutes, they've all got fleshed-out personalities.
Yeah.
And the guy who's the character, who I think nowadays it's almost like pulling the lever to say, oh, that's the guy you're supposed to dislike, Mr. Jefferson. The one who's you know, bossing everyone around for security. You really care for him when he's sacrificing himself for everyone. Oh, that was a point, wasn't it? Oh, what was that? What did I watch? You know how we've been banging on about in Jodie's era. She doesn't have to sacrifice herself because someone else does it for her. And I was thinking, oh, that's a brilliant example of how to do it properly in this era, and I can't remember what it was. Oh, that's it. It's the annoying boy genius in the Santarin two-parter who teleports himself up to the ship at the last minute to replace the Doctor. Transmats, sorry. But I think the essential problems to this era were summed up very aptly by Charlie Brooker, somewhere between season 2 and season 3.
Wish number 1. Next time round, less gurning. And by gurning, I mean this.
Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
What? Critical ghosts!
Alright, less of that. I know Doctor Who has always been an eccentric, but poor old David Tennant, who I think is great in all other respects, seems to have been encouraged to ramp up the goofiness until he becomes perilously close to being one of those archetypal annoying wacky characters from a bad US sitcom.
God, they know how to party!
And as for comedy sequences like this, if you ask the Chuckle Brothers to do that, they just go, I don't want Doctor Who bumming around like he's in a bad Tiswas tribute, okay? I want him being brooding and serious. Wish number 2, be less knowing, because occasionally, this series, the Doctor has behaved like a bit of a, oh, I've seen it all before, sort of arse.
Oh, it's space!
Oh, it's a sanctuary base!
And I think at some point, RTD lost control over his own inner camp fanboy. And like you were saying, no one's telling him or David to dial down the cheesy gurning and the shouty acting. Has no one learned that of the 13 actors, the fact that only Tom has ever been able to do shouty acting properly is probably a hint for the rest of them not to try it. And I wonder if Russell maybe unconsciously started writing for David Tennant rather than for the Doctor? For the David Tennant publicity machine?
I think he did.
If you think about it, fantastic is a catchphrase. You can work into any script as a sort of an overjoyed reaction. Geronimo, you can just about work into a script as if you're going to jump off a cliff or something. Alonzi can only be something that's said by someone who thinks he's funny, per se. And I won't go into David's shouty acting. But this is the thing, he's at his best when he's calmed down. And he's still and not frantic. In Gridlock, when they're all singing the hymn, and he's just leaning on the back of Brannigan and his wife's chair backs and just saying nothing and just watching what's going on. He's extraordinarily good. It's all done calmly. And some of the emotional high beats, you know, the goodbye on Bad Wolf Bay Beach, the loss of Madame de Pompadour, the farewell to Tim, that's it, at the War Memorial. Say good things about Donna, as you said, you know, with the library, her losing her kids. And, oh, and I'd completely forgotten. I'd forgotten it so much that when it happened, it really hit me emotionally. You know when her husband with the stammer misses her just before he dematerialises?
Oh,
that really hit me emotionally, that. Right. Has there anything else to say?
No, I think we need to close up because I think I could tell by Hayden's voice he's really tired and stuff. So
quickly read out, before we do a draw for the next Doctor's Era, quickly read out a letter we've had from friend of the show, Johnny Dabb. Hello, chaps. I hear you're going to do your 10th Doctor retrospective soon. 10th Doctor Era is a tough era to talk about, and I've been wondering what to say about it for quite a while, because it's quite conflicting. There are quite a few flaws which bring down the overall feel when I go and rewatch it, like the big-headedness of the 10th, the Lonely God thing, the overbloated grand finale of each season. But worst of all is the way that I can't hear the speech very well, because the music is far too loud. I end up turning the volume up and down like a bloody yo-yo. Huh. There are quite a few clunkers like Love and Monsters and The Unicorn and the Wasp. Everyone in the whole world seems to love that story, and I think it's s***. It has so much potential. Johnny, I don't expect that sort of thing from Johnny Dabb. It had so much potential with the Agatha Christie murder mystery thing. But no, it was all down to bloody stupid space wasps. I don't think that, yeah. But on the other side of the coin, this era was very popular with the general public. All the shops were stuffed with Doctor Who toys, and there were some very good stories like Blink and The Satan Pit, which I strongly feel will be viewed as classics when the next generation of fans comes forth. It was cool to be a Doctor Who fan during this time. We were all on top of the world, and I think this era's successes outweigh its failures.
That's fairly balanced.
Hayden, do you have the Whosium sombrero?
I do indeed.
With the names of the remaining doctors in?
Yes, and there's only three names in here. We've got Peter Capaldi, Colin Baker, and Pat Trout himself. Okay, so let's give it a rummage here. And we have a... Yes.
Can I guess from the tone of your voice who it is?
Oh, yes.
It's Patrick.
It is Patrick Trout. Get in.
Oh, wonderful. That's a really... Oh, yeah, that would be great. I'll enjoy that.
Just to quickly run through, Series 3 with Martha garnered 37% of our votes. Mm-hmm. Series 4 with Donna garnered 31% of our votes. Series 2 with Rose garnered 24% of our votes. And rather unfairly, because there's only four stories, Series 4, The Specials, garnered only 6.87% of our votes.
All right.
So the most popular era was Martha with Series 3.
Martha one, yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, well, good for her. That surprises me, because that is some stiff competition from Donna and Rose, isn't it?
But then I think we're at high points, aren't we? Mm. Human Nature and Blink hit it there.
Yes.
Midnight and Turn Left hit it for Series 4.
Yeah.
To be fair, the top two did hoover up just under 30% of the total vote between them.
Wow.
And so that's always going to be a big benefit to whichever series they landed in. Although there were also two Series 4 Donna stories in the top five also. And although Martha's only in Blink for all of 30 seconds, in Human Nature Family of Blood she does do a huge amount of the heavy lifting. Much more than a companion normally does. In fact, now this is interesting. If we ignore Impossible Planet, Satan Pit, the top five contains one story in which Martha is hardly in it, Blink, and one in which Donna is hardly in it, Midnight, and it also contains one story in which Martha does an unusual amount of the heavy lifting, Human Nature, Family of Blood, and one in which Donna does an unusual amount of the heavy lifting for a companion, in Turn Left.
Oh.
So that's nice and balanced, isn't it? So, Uncle Terence, have you come say goodbye to us? Is that a list of votes that you came to put in just too late? Or is it some information on what to do with corpses?
It's neither, Doc, actually. It's actually the list of errors in the Essential Terence Dicks Volume 1 round.
You do look terribly angry.
Do you know what? Heads will roll for this, but I'm not going to dump bodies in the river.
Uncle Terrence. We have cat-handed editors in sector. We have cat-handed editors in sector 27.
Easy for you to say. It's a twip.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dum Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at diddlydum, on Twitter at diddly_dum, or email us at diddlydumpodcast@yahoo.co.uk. Diddly Dum. Meaty, not runny. Top breeders recommend it because it's solid nourishment for the ears.